Hello and welcome to episode number 98 of Chell Squared. I'm your host, Andrew Chelney, and as always, a jam-packed episode for you today. Senior reporter for The Athletic Vancouver, Thomas Drance, stopped by the show last week. He said he thinks hockey could resume in July. Go back and listen to why he thinks that way in the last episode. Got a tiny bit of housekeeping to do before we dive into today's conversation. Give me a quick second and we'll get going. Chell Squared is the only podcast that takes you through Chell and back every single week. If you listen to the show, you are a Chell Raiser. If this is your first excursion into the show, your first tastes of the program, I hereby declare you a Chell Raiser. Share the podcast if you enjoy it, and if you really want to go above and beyond, chellsquaredshop.bigcartel.com is where you get your merch. You want to stand out and be the best dressed amongst your friend group? Well, that's where you go. At Chell Squared and at Chelney Andrew, C-H-E-L-N-E-Y Andrew, are the Twitter accounts to follow to stay up to date on my top five cover songs of all time list, and I expect zero slander on that list because all five of those songs are amazing. Though I am a full-time associate producer for NBA and NFL Radio at SiriusXM, this podcast is not affiliated with the company in any way. The opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone and may or may not reflect the views of SiriusXM. Joining Chell Squared today is defenseman for the Syracuse Crunch, Danny Wolcott. Danny, what's up? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm doing pretty well here. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you asking. So we were talking a little bit before the show. I'm down here in New York. I mean, I still haven't been outside. It's been over two calendar months. Thankfully, we are working from home remotely. I don't have to go outside. I see people walking outside. They got their masks on. It's so beautiful outside right now. It's sunny. It's a great day. I think it's like mid-60s. Like it's gorgeous out, and I'm not going outside because it is scary. But hopefully it's not as scary up in Syracuse right now as it is in New York.
No, I completely understand your worry about it. I mean, you can't really take any chances. But here in Syracuse, it's, you know, same weather. It's pretty nice out today. I'm just enjoying, actually. I'm just in my garage with the door open, enjoying the sun, get a little fresh vitamin D in my system. So it's good.
For sure, for sure. And before we get into it here, I want to bring up something that I talked about last week with Drancer. I know your nickname is Wally, right? But when I first texted you to come on, I used your first name. I said Danny. What's your opinion on opening up first contact with someone using their nickname? Like, I think you have to have some sort of prior rapport or acquaintanceship with somebody before using their nickname. Like, last week I said I'm not going to just walk up to Roberto Luongo and just say, hey, what's up, Bobby Lou? Because dude doesn't have a clue who I am. Where do you stand on that?
Honestly, at times I think my name is actually Wally. I introduce myself as Wally to people because that's what everyone's called me in the past couple of years, especially through hockey. My family will call me Danny or Daniel, but I mean in hockey it's always been Wally. So at times I just introduce myself as Wally because it's like my new name almost.
All right, So I'm changing your name in my notes to Wally as we speak. All right, that's the first change that I'll make. So what have you been up to in the last couple of months here without hockey going on? What's been occupying your time besides dunking on Crunch intern Danny Buckets? What have you been doing?
I mean, I started off the quarantine just looking for things to do. Went for runs early on, you know, trying to stay in shape for we thought was a possible return to the AHL season, which was not. I bought a house in Syracuse and I did all renovations, but I didn't put in a bar and I was going to hire someone to do it. But then I decided I had so much time on my hands, so I might as well just go ahead and do it myself. So I spent the first couple of weeks building a bar in my basement. So, I mean, I'm pretty excited that it's over and it looks good and it wasn't too much of a hassle, and I'm happy with it.
You got pictures on your social media? I want to see it. I'm sure people that are listening want to see it too.
Yeah, I was thinking of it. There's always finishing touches to do before I post it. So I'm going to just look at it, make sure everything's perfect. Because, you know, when you post stuff like that online, you always got either teammates or family members. Everyone always has their opinion on what to do better and stuff. So I'll make sure it's perfectly finished before I, I posted, but I definitely am going to post a before and after kind of picture here.
Absolutely. I mean, I want to see it. And I'm sure everybody that's following you also wants to see it. Because, I mean, not only are you having your own bar in your house, I mean, you built it from and I'm sure you had help along the way as well, but you, with your own hands, you know, have you always been a sort of a builder or a constructor in the family? Or was it something that you picked up because, like you said, you have a lot of time?
I mean, we never really had a lot of tools at the house growing up. My dad wasn't really much of a builder. My grandpa actually was a carpenter. So when I would go to his house or I'd find tools laying around, I'd try to build something with the extra wood we had in the shed or something. So I've always wanted to get my hands dirty and work on things, like create my own things. So this bar was definitely something I enjoyed and I had fun with. And, you know, during quarantine, I didn't have that much help. I had a couple opinions, couple of people lending me some tools that I needed. But I got myself a whole wood shop that I created first and foremost in my garage before starting. So, I mean, it was a good time and I like doing it. And you definitely learned a lot of things on the way.
That's awesome. What's your drink of choice?
It depends on the season, I guess. In season, I think I'll stick with like a vodka soda, something hydrating, and you know, it's also with alcohol. But in the summer, I'm more of like a Corona margarita guy. You know, a nice cold Corona on a sunny day or patio margarita is pretty my go-tos in the summer, really.
Settle a debate with one of my coworkers because he does not put limes in his Corona, which I think is a disaster. I think that is illegal personally, but settle this debate with me. Do you put limes in your Corona? Please say yes.
Yeah, absolutely. it honestly doesn't taste the same. Like sometimes you'll have no choice, but you know, you're on the boat or something, you don't bring any limes. I try to keep a lime concentrate in my fridge, so it's like it's close enough. But yeah, definitely limes.
Thank you for being on the right side of history, Wally. Like I really appreciate you settling that debate and you being correct here. So I mentioned Danny Buckets here a second ago. You call him your good luck charm on the road. What's the story behind that? Why do you call him that?
Well, I feel like every time he's on one of our trips, so he takes the bus with us and he's always in like the first seats. And so I knew him from before. And when I see him on the bus, I always shout Danny Buckets out, make it a little awkward for him. But every time he's there, I get either a point or a goal. So, I mean, one game, I got my first multi-goal game. So one was on the PK and one was on the power play. So I credit Danny Buckets for that.
He's got the unofficial assist on the score sheet.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know Danny Buckets, I know Danny Buckets. What is the best PG rated, I'll say, story of Danny Buckets that you can tell me on the show? You could tell me the not suitable for air stuff after we wrap up. I'm sure there's more than one. But what's the best story you can tell me about that guy on the air?
I mean, I definitely have a lot of stories that aren't PG rated, I should say, maybe, I don't know. But the one thing I was impressed with, we were playing basketball the other day, he's a good baller. Like he went around the key a couple times and just kept draining swishes. I was pretty impressed by that. So I wasn't thinking much of him as a basketball player until I played with him, and he was pretty impressive. So that's the best story I got for you.
They do call him Danny Buckets, and I guess that's one of the
reasons. I learned why now, so yeah.
There you go, Danny Swish. He and multiple other people that I've talked to say they call you the mayor of Syracuse. What is it about Danny Walcott that makes you such a fan favorite in that city?
This city is awesome. You know, it's a very blue collar city. You know, the people really, you know, gather around sports, whether it be university, the football, the basketball, even like the crunch. And I feel like my style of play really, you know, it's enjoyable to them. It's a very like gritty city. So the way I play is definitely, I mean, I feel it when I throw a hit, they're always yelling and they're loving it. And fans will come up to me and tell me that. So I think me and Syracuse is definitely a good fit. So, I mean, I guess if that's why they're calling me the mayor, then that's what I got. But I don't know if I would to go say the mayor. I've been here for a long time as well, so it's easy to say that. But yeah, definitely love the city.
A tenured mayor of Syracuse. How about that? How about we'll put that on a plaque and we'll give it to you. The tenured mayor of Syracuse, Danny Walcott.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Talk to me about how you got to Cuse, because you're a Quebec kid. You played a year of high school hockey in Illinois, and then you played a year in Lindenwood in the ACHA, and then you jumped to the Q and played two seasons. I mean, what were those years like for you, jumping around like that?
Well, you know, everyone's journey is a little different. You know, we all have dreams as kids to play in the NHL, any hockey player growing up, or play professional anywhere. Same with me. It was always my dream. And I always say it doesn't really, as long as your goal is to play in the NHL, it doesn't really matter how, what paths you go through, as long as one day you'll make it. And for me, being a undersized player, I was getting cut from a lot of hockey teams growing up, or in my teenage years, I should say. So I had to find teams that I could play on and keep, you know, whether I was fortunate that I was one of the better players on the teams I played on. So I was getting a lot of ice time. I was still playing a lot. You know, it's hard for guys that have a lot of talent that go into juniors at 16 years old and don't get the ice time that they think they deserve or that they need to develop as a player. And fortunately for me at those ages, I was, you know, being used, overly used in the teams I was playing for. So I think that benefited me tremendously. When I got cut in Quebec from the teams I wanted to make, I decided I just want to go move away and start from scratch and with people that don't really know me, they'll just judge me for my talent. And I went and joined my dad, and who lived in Chicago at the time, and I just played for the high school team there. Turns out it was one of the best teams in the state, so that was good. And then Rick Zombo also trying out for the USHL, the NHL, the NA3. I was getting cut because I was an import. And Rick Zombo, the coach at Lindenwood, offered me a scholarship, and I was like, yep, for sure. I mean, I got nothing else right now, so I'll definitely hop on that. And from there, I had a good season, called some teams back in the queue, and Armada gave me a shot. And from there, it's history. I got drafted to the Rangers after my first season, and then traded in the Marty St. Louis trade to Tampa Bay.
That always is something that you have to, you know, hang 100%. Your hat on, right? Because, like, you were in the trade for Marty St. Louis, right? I mean, that's always something that always has to stick with you, because Marty St. Louis is not your average player. He's Marty St. Louis.
Yeah, right now, that's my claim to fame. For now, hopefully it changes. But no, I always say it was like kind of a skewered trade, where the trade was a 7th-round pick. And then after the conference finals in Tampa beat New York, I got traded, and they traded back that initial 7th-round pick that they initially gave. It was a conditional. So to me, I always say that they were playing for me. So had the Rangers won, I probably still would have been with the Rangers. But yeah, it's definitely it's not super far-fetched, but it's like an extended Marty St. Louis trade. But I'm sticking to just being part of, if anything, I was one for one with Marty St. Louis. So
absolutely, I would stick to that every day of the week. I got traded for Marty St. Louis. It doesn't matter what the semantics are. At the end of the day, I was part of the deal for Marty St. Louis. So you know what that should be? That should be your Twitter bio. I once was traded for Marty St. Louis. That should be it.
Yeah, maybe post career if that's the top of the top. But for now, I'll just stick to what's there.
I gotcha. Well, speaking of post career, when you're 45 or 50 years old, when you finally decide to hang up the skates, what do you want to do? Have you thought about that? Do you want to be a coach? Was it something that's not hockey related that you potentially want to do? What is Danny Walcott's career looking like at age 75 when he's done playing hockey?
Honestly, I have so many different career paths that interest me, whether it be definitely coaching or in hockey is definitely one of them. But if that's not an opportunity, or if I decide that after my career I'm burnt out and I do a couple years of coaching or whatnot and I'm just not loving it anymore, I'll definitely pursue one of my hobbies as a part-time barber. Maybe open up a shop and, you know, be that old man that just has that barbershop on the corner of the street in a little suburbia neighborhood. Call it 8-5 fade like I do. So that would definitely be a nice career after hockey.
Do you give
related to hockey.
Do you give your teammates haircuts?
Oh, yeah.
No, really? Yeah.
Free of charge. Free of charge, too.
Wow. Yeah. That I did not know. That's really cool. Do you give it just to the players, or do you give them to the coaches? Do you give Danny Buckets a haircut?
No. It's my setup at the rink, so I kind of just usually just some trainers or the equipment guys, and then mostly just the players. I actually have a Instagram account called 85 Fade, and it's all my work is on there.
That's awesome. How did you pick up that hobby? Because it's not something that, you know, that's an easy thing to pick up just as something that you do on the side. So how did you get into being a barber?
Well, growing up, my dad was always the one cutting me and my brother's hair. And then when we got a little older, he moved to Chicago, and then we still had the clippers at home. And then me and my brother started just cutting each other's hair. So at a young age, we were cutting each other. It was just straight buzz cuts, nothing too fancy. But as years went on, I would like go to barbershops and get like fades and stuff and kind of watch what they were doing, because I figured it shouldn't be that hard. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It looked pretty straightforward. So I tested out on my brothers and then started cutting my own hair. And then, you know, some friends that would trust me enough to let me cut their hair. And then when I, last year, I was out for 2 shoulder surgeries, so I had a lot of spare time on my hands, and I offered my roommate who wanted a haircut, and he walked into the rink, and he was telling everyone I did his hair, and the guys liked it and started asking me. And at first, the payment was just donations to, like, a gift, so I got more clippers and different, like, a mirror and sprays and stuff, so I built up a nice little barbershop in Syracuse, War Memorial. So now I figured I'd start an Instagram account, and yeah.
So next time I'm up in Syracuse, because I'm a Syracuse grad, I covered the SU men's ACHA program as their senior beat reporter while I was still in school, and I'm interested in hearing about your jump from the ACHA to the AHL. But really quick, next time I'm up in Syracuse, what would it take for me to give you a text and to walk up to War Memorial and ask you for a haircut?
Just maybe a week advance warning. I mean, I will be playing, so it could be a little harder for extra time, but definitely if you give me a heads up a little bit in advance, we can figure something out.
Done deal. Now I'm excited. Now I haven't left the house in 2 months, and I'm thinking about in the future when I finally am able to leave the house and we can do things again without masks and restrictions. Hopefully tomorrow, but who knows when that'll happen. But I'm thinking about that moment now where I'm finally back at Q's and I'm getting a haircut from Wally, man. That's gonna be cool. So I haven't done like super extensive research on this. Like I haven't looked up every single player's hockey reference page. But the jump from ACHA to the AHL is rare, to say the least. Now, you mentioned that you gave the Q calls when you were at Lindenwood. Tell me more about that, and what specifically led to you going from Lindenwood to the Q. Tell me more about that. How was that transition like? And then how was that moment where the Rangers picked you in the draft? Tell me more about that.
When I was at, so Lindenwood was one of the better teams in the ACHA. Penn State had just gone Division I NCAA, and Rick Zombel, the coach he's still coach now, was telling me how Lindenwood was going to be the next team in line with the right funding to become a Division I school for hockey. So it was a 2-year process, he said. So I was kind of, you know, I was in it. I was playing at Lindenwood, which is one of the better teams. Like I said, we lost in the national finals But I always wanted to play, like, I was still 18, and I was thinking maybe I can play World Juniors. Like, my dad and I were, my dad was really pushing it a lot. I was kind of like, you know, I don't, well, they don't know me, so how am I even going to get a trial for Team Canada World Juniors? And Ted Sather, the assistant coach who coached the New York Rangers in the past, he knew, he had a contact in Canadian junior Canadians, in the Canadian Hockey League, who he had one of his players at the time in the East Coast League when he was coaching there was now a head coach for a junior major team. So he gave him a call and said, hey, like, I got a player here that he wants to make World Juniors, but he doesn't know what steps to go through. Like, could you help him out of it? And JF was a coach. He said, well, I don't really have a say in the World Juniors camp. You would have to play in Major Junior to get a better look, obviously. So during the summer, I kept in contact with JF Will, and I met with him and Joel Bouchard of the Armada. It was just meetings, and at that time, it was like the NCAA rule where if I play a preseason game for Armada, then I wouldn't be eligible to go back to school at Lindenwood to play there. So it was a big decision I had to make. And the first day of camp, at this point, I'm still thinking maybe I'm going to go back to Lindenwood. Maybe I'm going to stay here. I just want to kind of feel it out a bit, see where I stand. And the first day of camp, Joel came up to me and told me that there's no need for me to go back to something that maybe is going to become Division One at some point. When he told me verbatim, I can be the best player. He can make me the best defenseman in the league. And I know, I mean, when a GM says that to you, GM/assistant coach says that to you, it's hard to turn them down. And, you know, you got someone that's going to be on your side in your corner. So I definitely took that leap of faith. And stayed in Major Juniors, which turned out great because it was my hometown team, so everything was just perfect.
And it worked out for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy because to get to World Juniors, which was my main goal, there was a Subway Series that you would play against Team Russia. And I was able, after 15 games into the year, I got selected to play on that team, so I was a step closer to making that World Juniors team. And that was just, that right there was crazy because that's what put me on the map also for all the NHL teams. And the fact that it took me 15 games to get on track was great. And it just felt like my world was changing real quick. And then, yeah, I mean, I had a lot of interviews with different teams, and New York decided to take a chance on me. So that was also unbelievable.
And you've been part of the crunch now for, this is your fifth season. You got, like we talked about, you were traded for Marty St. Louis, and you keep resigning in Syracuse. What is it about Syracuse and what is it about the crunch that really makes you feel like you belong in this city, on this team? Like you mentioned, you bought a house here, you're renovating, you're building your own bar in there. I mean, what is it about this city that really makes you feel at home?
It's just the people. Like, it's really, you know, blue collar, like I said before, it's like hardworking people, and it's just, you go to the rink, you play in front of them, and they're always, I feel like the rink is always packed. I mean, fortunately, we play, our owner has us play on Fridays and Saturdays a lot at home, which is great because, you know, the guys that come through here always say how Syracuse is a lot better than they think. Not to say anything bad about Hartford, but when I was in Hartford, I don't know, I just had a weird feel about, it was my first taste of professional hockey, and I had a weird feel about it, and it was just, something was off. And when I came to Syracuse, it clicked right away. You know, there was a lot of older guys. It was, you know, at the same time, as it's a college town, so it's young, and you have the city, which is a little older, a little different vibe. But I mean, guys, it's usually, really, I come back for the players that, you know, Tampa does a real good job of drafting good people or bringing in good people. They're a great organization for that. And it's always, every year, it's always a great time with the guys that come through here. And I feel like why cut ties with the place that's been good to me and that still wants me to come back when I don't even know how how it is out there. And guys that come here always say how they love it. So why not stay here until, you know, I want to make the NHL. And Tampa is the best team in the league, or considered one of the best teams in the league. So if I can crack that roster, that would be even just the cherry on top.
And speaking of your relationship with the fans, when the Crunch were doing the Hockey Fights Cancer, the patch on your jersey, you put a season ticket holder, their name on their on your jersey. Tell me about that couple, their impact on you, and why you put their name on your jersey.
I mean, they've always been, since my first year here, would have been helping my roommate find his car and get a good deal on it, to always being at every game and bringing little gifts here and there. Like, they made necklaces and heart-shaped necklaces with my face on it. It was kind of cool. Like, I give it to my family members and they still wear it to this day. And it's, you know, they've always been great to me, Bob and Rose. And I mean, it was such a small thing to do, considering, I mean, it just, I had to, every player had to write a name. And, you know, Bob had just been diagnosed with prostate cancer. So, I mean, what better time to recognize him and her, them as a couple in the family, on a night where, you know, people around the world are struggling to cope with, you know, cancer is bad and it affects a lot of people. And, you know, one little thing, I didn't realize how emotional he would get or how great a feeling it would be for him. But for me, it was inevitable for me to do. So I mean, those guys have been great to me. They always help me out with whether it be my house or anything I need. So it was a small token of appreciation.
How is he now? Is he doing better?
Yeah, he's in recovery, so that's good. Everything's going great.
Oh, that's great news. And one of the guys that you know on your team well, I had him on a few weeks ago, Scott Wedgwood. He is a big video game guy. Are you teaming up with him at all virtually, either on because he streams Fortnite? I know he's a big fan of that. Are you teaming up with him on Fortnite? Are you playing him in Chell? Are you beating him, or is that not your thing?
I actually don't own a video game console.
Wow.
So. Yeah, because I know myself. I used to have an Xbox, used to have a PS2, and I get addicted real quick. So I was in Tampa actually a couple weeks, actually right when this all started. I went down to Tampa and just wanted to be in the sun. And so I was staying at Sorelli's, and he had an Xbox, and I think I was on the Xbox 24/7 playing Madden. So I try to stay away from it, and the best way is to not buy one. So yeah, I like watching him on Twitch sometimes, especially when he was playing with the Crunch, and, you know, chime in a bit here and there. But I'm sure he'd probably beat me in anything but Madden.
Well, then what do you do to kind of kill time? Like, because I know for me, if I'm not working, if I'm not doing something for work, or if I'm not doing if I'm not doing my podcast, I'm pretty much either on Call of Duty or on 2K or playing NHL. Like, I'm doing something. I'm playing something to kind of occupy my time. If you're not doing that, then what are you? Are you on Netflix? Is that what you're doing? Like, what do you do to kind of fill your time?
Well, I started off initially, it was the bar that took a lot of my time, and then also working out. I'm a big workout guy, so you know, being, especially days like today where it's beautiful outside, not having an Xbox actually helps me get out and do stuff. But the one game I do play is on my phone when it's rainy day and I'm kind of bored is Risk. I download the Risk app on my phone and I just play Risk, which, you know, an online game takes about an hour. So that takes a lot of my time. And, you know, I love to cook, so I'm always in the kitchen cooking every meal. So, I mean, I make do with what I got and, you know, try to stay busy any way I can.
I'm looking up Rift as we speak right now. I'm trying to, like, I'm a little bit of a phone gamer, but I've never heard of Rift. So I'm looking it up right now. I'm going to figure it out. and we'll I'm gonna try to get this game going as well, because I've been playing way too much Call of Duty for my own good. I do want to bring up one thing here really quickly, and that is the, and I'm sure you've read it, the Kimalu article that he posted a couple of days ago talking about his experience with racism growing up and why hockey isn't for everyone. And what were your thoughts on it when you saw it? Have you experienced anything like this? And what can we do as hockey fans? Obviously, the number one thing is, hey, don't be an awful person, right? Like, I feel like that's the easy, that's easy, right? Like, hey, don't be terrible and, like, treat everybody with respect. And, you know, but for some people, I guess that's too difficult. I don't know. Those people are terrible. But for hockey fans and for everyone that works in the sport, what can we do to make hockey a more accessible place for everybody?
I mean, it's, I did read that article, and the one thing is, you know, it's an issue ongoing, and not just hockey, but in the world, in any sport. And it just, unfortunately, it's something that's present in the world we live in today. I mean, just really the one, I don't want to get too into it, but the one thing is just to try to be, like you said, a better person, like myself. I try every day to be, you know, a better person and work on myself. And, you know, when I do hear stuff that happens, like comments, and when I experience it myself, I'm always a little more, like, I'm just a little disappointed in the ignorance. And I try not to, you know, react in a aggressive manner, because I like to take the high road on situations where I'm presented like that. Because I don't want to create more animosity. You know, you never want to create a more division by, you know, taking action physically or aggressively or negatively. I think he's doing the right thing by, you know, writing about it. Words are strong. And, but, yeah, it just, you know, it's disappointing to hear stuff that happens like that to, Keandre Miller. Like, what happened to him was, you know, it's awful, and you hate seeing that, and you want him to know that he's not alone in this. And, you know, it's, as long as people can band together peacefully and, you know, send the right message, it's all we can really do, because stopping someone from saying things like that doesn't stop them from thinking them. So you just gotta try to be better as people, because it's not only racial slurs, but it's homophobic slurs and any sort of, you know, denigrating thing. So, I mean, just won't say too much more on that, but I did read the article, and I think it's a good awareness, but it's also not just hockey. It's present in the world, and as a community of the world, we just got to be a little better. That's all.
That's a great point. I mean, like, the moral of the story, I feel like, hey, be better. This is just not something that we should be having to deal with in the present day, but unfortunately we still are as a society dealing with this. Don't be a pet. Like, how is it so difficult to not be a bad person? It is, I don't know. For most people, it's easy. Hey, don't be terrible. But for those select few, for some reason, it is really a lot harder than it should be. Wally, really, really, really appreciate taking the time. I got one more quick question for you related to Syracuse. Now, you've been building your own bar, but I want you to rank these bars that I got on this list. You've been here a while. I'm sure you've been to all of these at some point. Rank these bars. You got the Saltine Warrior. You got Lucy's. You got Clinton Street Pub. You got Harry's. And you got Fagan's. Which is your favorite and which is your least favorite?
So you want me to go 1 to 5? 5 to 1? How you want this?
Yeah, let's do 1 to 5.
These are tough, because these are some that I go to, I'd say, occasionally. Occasionally plus plus. So we got Lucy, Saltine, CSP, Harry's, and Fagan's, right?
Yes.
Wow. Those are... it's hard. You got me in a... I really don't, because they're all good for different times, you know. I would say First of all, are we talking Lucy's or are we talking New Orange Crate?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because it's changed. So
I'll let you answer it the way that you want to answer it.
Yeah, I'll rank it. So Harry's would be the five, obviously, at number five. Man, this is tough. Fagan's is flip night, so that's good. But any other night is meh. So I'd say put Fagan's at four. Saltine Warrior is a definite Sunday fun day football sort of place. So I'll put that at three. CSP two, and then Lucy's one.
What's your favorite part about Lucy's? Why is it number one?
Well,
the old
Lucy's.
Okay.
The old Lucy's. It was just, even actually the new one is not bad because you got the outdoor back lot. It was just always my go-to. You know, RC's a good buddy of mine. So is John Salt from Saltines as well. But I don't know. It was just a good feel, you know. It's probably the one that I've been to the most, so it has to be number one on my list. But yeah.
I got you.
Just good vibes, good people. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. I said this a second ago. One final question for you. What is your favorite non-hockey Syracuse event? And I ask this as somebody that spent time in Syracuse, but for people that don't really know about Syracuse or haven't been to Syracuse, I guess it's kind of a commercial for Syracuse because it's a great city. But what is your favorite non-hockey or maybe non-sports related Syracuse event?
This is always an easy question for me, and anyone that knows me knows is Green Beer Sunday. That's honestly might be single-handedly the best day of the year. It feels like every year I've been here, it's been a nice day out. Unfortunately, this year we were in Springfield during Green Beer Sunday, and I was getting texts from people like, "Oh my God, what a year for you to miss it!" I mean, it's easy, honestly. It's Green Beer Sunday, hands down, and no other question, no other comment needed. If you don't know what it is, then I suggest you head to Syracuse and figure out. It's the last Sunday of February. On Tipperary Hill.
For those that don't know, what is Green Beer? What is Green Beer Sunday? What is that?
It's just a major gathering of basically, it feels like all of Syracuse at Coleman's in the back lot or inside, and you're drinking green beer. There's a live concert going on, and everyone just hanging out, having a great time. And like I said, every year it's the last Sunday of February, so you're expecting it to be cold and, you know, wintery, but I feel like every year I've been here, past 5 years, it's been a gorgeous day, sun, whether it starts raining in the morning, it's going to clear up in the afternoon, and it's just a great time of a bunch of people hanging out, having a good time drinking green beer.
I haven't done that. I didn't do that when I was up there. I didn't know about it, and now I've heard it from you, and I've heard it from a few of the people, and now, like... Now I want to go just to experience it. I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun, and I'm gonna keep lying to you, but one final thing I'm gonna let you go, Ollie. John Wildhack, who basically is the lead sports guy over at SU. I've heard from multiple people that he is unwilling to give Syracuse University a D1 men's program. What would you say in response to that? Because my answer is pretty clear. And I'm sure the club team, I know their answers as well. But what would you say to John if he was listening right now and you wanted to bring D1 NCAA hockey to Syracuse?
I mean, it's the rest of the school is D1, so why not have the? Because I'm sure the women's team, right, is D1 as well.
Yes,
which was the same at Linden with our. Our women's team was D1, but our men's team was club. I mean, Syracuse is a great school. There's no need why it shouldn't be, hockey shouldn't be a D1 program. And why not add more teams to D1 and make hockey like the new basketball or football, where it seems like every team in the country, every school in the country has a D1 program for hockey, which would be great. I mean, any chance you get to be in a hockey city or a city like Syracuse, and you have a chance to get a D1 program for hockey, you should. It's a great city.
I agree, and I'm glad you said that. Wally, again, super appreciate your time. Where can people follow you? on Instagram, on Twitter, etc. Where can people catch up with you?
Twitter or Instagram at WallyD19. Or, and then from there, you can follow 85 Fade, which is my barber shop account.
Absolutely. And I'll throw that a follow right now. And what is your, by the way, what's this V Nation brand that you're a part of? What's that about?
It started when I was in juniors, actually. My good buddy from, one of my good friends from back home, he wanted to start, there was a hoodie company called UH, and he was always thinking about starting a clothing, sports clothing company. And so he asked me if I would wear, he came up with the name, the logo and everything, and asked me if I would help, you know, put the name out for his brand. And it started with my junior team, and now it's spread throughout the whole league. And even I still bring it to Syracuse here. So it's just my really good friend that, you know, he asked me one day, or we had a beer at a pub, and he said, hey, like, can I get your support for this? And I said, absolutely. And he's a hardworking guy, and it's showing now, because I've seen it in St. Louis, and I've seen it in Chicago, and it's crazy how, like, just one word of mouth can get out, and I'm happy for him. And that's how it started, and it's thriving right now. I mean, not during this time right now, obviously, but they are, you know, converting their items to, you know, mask and everything that's good for people right now in this time. So, you know, it's a home company, so that's always nice. So,
Wally, like I said, you know, really appreciate your time. I asked you for half an hour. You gave me over 40, and you didn't have to do that, and I really appreciate it. Next time when we can go outside and do things again, I will be sure to go back to Q's, and I will send you a text, and we will get, and I really am looking forward to this haircut now. Like, I'm super interested, and I want to experience that. Wally, really appreciate your time, like I said, and hope to talk to you again real soon.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
And this has been episode number 98 of Cho Squared, number 99, coming up next Friday. I'll talk to you then.